South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, now, as promised, I'm going to continue on with that diatribe that I started last week concerning that expat who lived in Uruguay and Chile. If you remember, he was complaining about how... For him and all his expat friends, just about everything turned to crap or crashed and burned, including personal relationships. Obviously, this guy's got a really dark tale to tell. And here at the Expat Files, we've never been bashful about revealing Latin America warts and all. And of course, all stories and viewpoints are welcome, as long as they agree with mine. Just kidding. Anyway, since Uruguay and Chile have been on the radar for expat wannabes quite a lot lately... I thought it'd be interesting for you guys to hear his version of things since he's had boots on the ground in both places for a total of about 6 years. Now, I finished off the last show by paraphrasing him when he said that going down to Latin America as a couple is a surefire way to break up a marriage. He had his reasons, which we'll get into later, so we'll let him play devil's advocate here and let him get on with his rant. And what you hear now is going to be a bit abridged and paraphrased, since, like I said before, these bloggers have their own dedicated communities and use a lot of their own catchphrases, jargon, and slang. So I'll be skipping some of that stuff as we go along. Anyway, continuing on here from last time, he goes on to say, after mentioning that anyone coming down as an expat couple should expect disaster down the line when it comes to the relationship, well, he says, when I set about my great South American adventure... I spoke a handful of horrible Spanish, and once in the flow of things, I had to sink or swim. And now, after 6 years of it, I'm pretty well fluent in the language. Learning this skill is one thing I do not regret, but listen to me, please, when I say this. It does not make things much easier. Anyone ought to think it should, but it doesn't work out that way. You will understand every word that is written or said, but you will still not understand the lack of logic behind you not being able to get done what needs to be done down here. And it will not stop the culture from ripping you off and raping you every time you take your eye off the ball. Scumbags are scumbags because they lie in any language. Then he goes on to say, South America, all of it, is that way for a reason. It's not for lack of foreign influence. I guess he means us, expats. Who knows? Anyway, then he says... It's not for lack of access to people or services or things. It's that way because of its stubborn culture, ingrained and encouraged ignorance, and government interference with any and all things wonderful and efficient. When you get drafted for your adventure, you will show up thinking that there is opportunity at every turn, thinking, why in the hell hasn't anyone done this or that thing yet? In other words, why haven't people just picked up the ball and filled in the business gaps yet? Then he says, the simple answer to that is, they have. They have filled in the gaps, and they failed miserably, not to lack of trying, but due to the fact that the locals will make sure that you fail. Turns out, he says, every bright idea that expats and gringos have in South America is just a dying ember of someone else's broken dream. And I guess he means there, some other gringo's broken dream. Someone who's tried it before, and failed, I guess. Okay, then he says, and once you start digging, you'll find all those old bones buried under those new ideas you thought you had. And I'm paraphrasing here because, again, he doesn't write a very flowing blog or narrative at all. I wonder what Cleveland Public School he flunked out of. Anyway, it's not a cut on the content of his letter. I'm just saying, if you actually write a blog and continue doing it every day or every week, like this guy apparently does, you should have a halfway decent control of your grammar, huh? Well, I should talk, right? Anyway, he goes on to say, in South America, you will not get ahead by holding up the torch of reason. That'll just make it easier for the locals to come after you with their pitchforks and tear you down. He says, the torch of reason makes the locals angry, actually, like kicking a beehive. Reason and logic are the Frankenstein monsters of South America. He continues by saying, you left the U.S. as an expat, because you felt you didn't belong, and now you're leaving South America because you don't feel you belong there either. So in effect, because you failed in both countries, you're an extra alien and don't fit anywhere. So he says, the locals are ignorant in any third world country, maybe even worse here. But because now you're a citizen of the world, because you're an expat, you feel triple homeless. So what do you do? I don't know the answer, but maybe I'll go back to being a boat hippie. Maybe I'll be so enamored with Asia. By the way, I'm leaving for Asia tomorrow. Anyway, maybe I'm just repeating the same idiot behavior. I'm just thinking, as screwed up as it is, the United States is still home and we expats have to face that. As much as I hate Big Brother, I also love Big Brother. I think that painful reality is sinking in. I struggle a great deal with the moral implications of this because I find supporting the empire to be morally revolting, what with Big Brother and the police state, etc., etc. Then he says, some say we should hunker down and fight the system at home in the U.S. Some say walk away, like I did. Some say don't leave the states. Keep your head down, minimize your taxes, and keep your eye open for the exit signs. And then he says, what I do know is that another thing no one ever tells you when you leave is that we end up having a lot more in common with our expat friends than anyone else. So we expats have to stick together. When we leave to become expats, what we become is a strange patchwork of an adopted family in another country. So then he says, is living abroad worth it? N-O, no. For me, as a result, I'm poorer for it, poorer in friends and family, lacking a true home. In fact, I have passed up countless opportunities over the years, chasing after what I consider now BS in the third world. Sure, I learned a foreign language in several local dialects, but I could have done that a few hours a week in a community college. And yes, a few investments in the third world panned out nicely, but nowhere near what I could have made had I simply stayed home. And had I not incurred the expenses of living in pricey places abroad and getting ripped off by locals, etc., I could have just bought a second passport outright. As it stands, the Uruguay passport is still a who knows kind of situation. After another year of pestering and trying and literally accumulating 25 pounds of papers and paperwork that I've assembled, and yes, I actually weighed them, so that's the truth. Then he says, after all of that, I could have gotten and maintained my foreign residences in both Chile and Uruguay and still lived in the U.S., vacationing once in a while in those foreign lands instead of living there. That would have been smarter. Even though now I have no passports to either country, I can still head back to them and stay as long as I want, if need be. That's a pretty good plan B. And then he adds another paragraph here he doesn't seem so certain about. He says again, do I regret moving to South America? To be honest, sometimes yes and sometimes no. I am a firm believer that you should regret things that you haven't done, not the ones you have done. But really, what grand things could I have done had I stayed? There have been lots of things I wanted to do, which I couldn't because I was stuck chasing paperwork in some idiot government bureaucrat's office, doing some moron's job for them. Or generally just chasing my tail, herding cats in the third world. And he says, as I write this, I'm getting my bags packed to travel to Asia for 6 weeks. And I found out last night that the guy I trusted to finish the renovations on my apartment in Santiago, Chile, has not shown up for a couple of weeks, and I'm probably going to return home to the same half-finished wreck of a place that I left 2 months ago. What a nice thing to think about while you're trying to relax on the other side of the earth, huh? Especially when you're on a boat with no internet or telephone for 3 weeks. And here are his final words. My advice? Stay put, keep your powder dry, cultivate your friendships and work hard back in the USA where you know the lay of the land and the locals are less likely to screw you. Live within or below your means, save aggressively, but be ready to hit the road if you absolutely have to. Just don't give up your US opportunities at the expense of a shiny El Dorado you think is laying right behind the next hill. Okay, now that I've read this guy's little piece, I want to read you another little piece from a guy who responded to that rant. A guy who spent just as much time down in Uruguay and Chile, but with a completely different outlook. And of course, I'll give you my response in a few minutes too, but I want to read this guy's response because it says something mighty interesting to all you guys down there who've put the idea into your head that Uruguay is the golden retirement paradise. And in this guy's response, he's coming from a very different angle, one that I've never talked about before, but was meaning to. Now, since this guy really did his legal homework, it's best I lay it on you in his own words, and then I'll say my piece. So here goes with this guy's response. And I'll only have to do a little bit of paraphrasing here because this guy is obviously more coherent than the other guy. He starts out by saying, listen, living abroad gets better. You just have to stick with it. It sounds like for you, with all that negativity, the romance period is over and now reality is setting in, which can be a bit depressing. Once that passes, you'll know what you're up against, and you'll learn to lower your expectations of the new countries you plan to spend time in. Accordingly, after all, this is the third world. In every country I've been to, I've met people who'd rather be in my country, the U.S. of course, or the one I just arrived from. Everyone is looking for that perfect place that just doesn't exist. You have to get over that hump and understand that. The challenge is balancing the negative and positive aspects of the place and then visiting the place, of course, and making something work. Then he says, as for me, before moving to Chile for the purpose of acquiring land and citizenship, I looked into moving to Uruguay too for the same reasons. I figured it would be easier there until I read the Uruguayan Constitution and discovered that I would have obtained a kind of a second-class citizenship, unequal to a natural-born Uruguayan, with the risk of eventually losing that citizenship after acquiring another, unlike natural-born Uruguayans who can have dual citizenship. If you become a naturalized Uruguayan citizen, you can't. And after discovering by reading the Uruguayan Constitution that voting is obligatory for all citizens, not to mention the vague uncertainties in their income tax law, and seeing the high taxes on automobiles and basically all imports, etc., etc., I thought, what else are these guys going to come up with? Talk about Big Brother and the bureaucratic nightmare. So I decided that Uruguay was probably not in the cards for me. Not if my objective is to increase my freedom and decrease my exposure to bureaucracy. Who wants to move to another country that ends up being just another cage, like the States? Anyway, originally I had discarded Chile as a destination because I was looking for a territorial tax-based country in South America. But even after I acquired permanent residency in Panama, I prefer spending my time in Chile because it's just a better country in my opinion. And having a lawyer assist me with residency and banking in Chile made things super easy. Turns out in Chile, the requirements for citizenship are also straightforward. First obtain temporary and then definite permanent residency in Chile, and then stay in the country for 180 days a year for 5 years, including the years of temporary residency. Then, unlike Uruguay, dual citizenship is allowed. And again, unlike Uruguay, there's only one class of citizenship, once you've got it, in Chile. The natural-born and the nationalized citizens have exactly the same rights. And sure, you could just go out and purchase some economic citizenship somewhere, but in my case, I still need to establish residency somewhere in order to get away from the super high income taxes in the States and Europe. So, even if I spend $1,500 a month on rent for 6 months in Chile for 5 years, which is the minimum amount of time you need to remain in Chile to maintain your residency, the fact is there is still no economic citizenship program out there that you can buy from any country for, let's say, $50,000 that offers a high-quality passport like Chile that has visa-free access to Europe, the USA, Russia, and the rest of Central and South America. And in Chile, there are no bribes or palm greasing required. And plus, moving my money down here, I'm protecting my assets that would have gone to waste via government theft back in the States. As far as I'm concerned, a win-win situation. So for me, in response to that other guy's rant, is living abroad worth it? Yes, I'd say most definitely. For both personal and financial reasons, it really works for me. Not to mention that I've met amazing young expats from various backgrounds while in Chile, which was completely unexpected. So that's just the icing on the cake. So anyway, that's a response from a guy who thoroughly investigated Uruguay and ended up in Chile. Now, there's a lot of little points to talk about on this, so let's start from the beginning. First, as a general blanket statement, I have to say that our guy with the dark message there, to me, he seems like he did almost everything the wrong way. First of all, he ended up smack dab on what you might call the burgeoning tourist trail, the places that rags and mags like International Living and all those retirement magazines are touting as the latest and greatest places for expats to retire. And by then, it's no secret anymore, and it's not cheap either. Why does it seem like every time magazines like International Living pump up a place as a great expat living destination, the bloom is already off the rose and all the juice has been squeezed out of it? It's just so predictable. And of course, the gringo dollar and the euros are flooding into those places like a gusher. And when the expats arrive, by the boatload, they immediately hook up with lawyers and real estate agents. And how do they find these guys? They pick them off the internet, the yellow pages, or heard about it in an expat bar from a gringo friend of a friend. And they end up getting sucked into every scam imaginable. I know expats and gringos just like that. They just can't manage to live without hanging around with other gringos and expats. And that just keeps you separated from what's really happening. It's one way to assure yourself you're going to be isolated. It's a way to be trapped in a kind of artificial niche that I don't particularly care for at all. But gringos and fresh expats seem to attract each other like lint. I know the type. I see them all the time. Going to gringo clubs and bars and even starting their own little gringo clubs. I mean, if you want to play and hang out with gringos, why did you ever leave Cleveland? And that's also one way to guarantee you're never going to perfect your Spanish. Oh, you'll eventually be able to buy gas and things at the grocery store, but don't expect to pick up on the nuances of the Latins around you conversing. Irrespective of what our first guy said, remember, he said he was 100% fluent after 6 years. Well, I don't know about that. I know a lot of American women in Chicago who think they're great dancers, too. Unless our guy's some kind of a gifted linguist, I don't believe he learned his Spanish 100% and knows some dialects, too. The fact is, I don't know any gringos or expats who can claim that. Only expats who happen to have lived in Latin America as kids can really speak flawless Spanish. I can't, and I'm off the tourist trail, and I've been down here more than 20 years. I guess I'm just a realist, and I know I can't dance. Then again, maybe I'm just thick. So, like I said, gringos and fresh expats seem to clump together like hairballs. You see them hanging together all the time, at gringo clubs and bars and every place else gringos hang. And as a result, they end up paying too much for everything. And then when they find out in the non-gringo saturated parts of a country or town, prices are a lot lower, they whine that the locals are taking advantage of them and ripping them off. I mean, I remember back in Costa Rica more than 20 years ago. Now, you'd think back then before the place was really getting pumped up, discovered, and recommended by every retirement website, that it would be cheap, basically unspoiled, and there would be tons of deals to be found. With everything from real estate to hotel prices to professional services, like doctors, accountants, and lawyers. Well, I'll tell you, every single one of my gringo expat buddies in Costa Rica was actually scammed in one way or another by a lawyer or ripped off on a real estate deal. It happened to me. My Costa Rican lawyer gouged me a number of times, just like my expat friends. And most of them got ripped off by their very own lawyers, too. And here's the thing. When new expat friends of mine would come down, they'd say, "Johnny, I need a lawyer. Can you give me the name and number of your guy?" Now, I knew my lawyer was gouging gringos. And he was gouging me, but he didn't bleed me enough to cause me any real lasting pain. And as long as I kept my eyes open, he didn't gouge me as much as he gouged a lot of other guys. So, what was I supposed to tell these fresh expats? Well, yeah, here's the name and number of my lawyer. He's a cheat. But he's not a big cheat. He'll gouge you, but he won't drain you dry. And that was over 20 years ago. That's why I learned the hard way that you got to get off the tourist trail. And you've got to disassociate yourself from the gringo bars and the expats. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, you can't have expat friends and buddies, but when you're off the tourist trail, you really have to go out and try to find them, because they're not just popping up around every corner like they are in Panama, Costa Rica, Chile, Uruguay, and even Bolivia these days, and Mexico for sure. Now, let's discuss a little bit about coming down as an expat couple, since our dark, pessimistic guy says relationships like that are doomed for disaster. Well, one thing is that he fails to mention that, up in the States anyway, half of the marriages in the States disintegrate within 5 to 7 years. And moving to another country doesn't seem to alter those statistics at all. In fact, it turns out statistically, about 50% of married American couples fall within that crash and burn range of 5 to 7 years, whether they're an American couple living in the States, Latin America, Europe, or Asia. Take your pick. So if you're a married couple coming to Latin America, will your marriage eventually disintegrate? Well, flip a coin. Who knows? Either way, 50-50 ain't good. And Americans and expats and gringos on their second marriages are even worse off statistically. So there's definitely no real proof that it's Latin America that is the actual root cause of some of these breakups. It seems to be a phenomena that knows no borders. But I will say this, and I've seen it 1,000 times. For both first world expat males and females, there's an awful lot of temptation, simply due to the fact that nearly every Latino and Latina has a secret fantasy of hooking up with a gringo or a gringa. Permanently, that is, as in kids and marriage. And of course, it's 1,000 to 1 or 10,000 to 1 shot, especially off the tourist trail, simply because we're vastly outnumbered. Nevertheless, it's a fact, and I can prove it. But that's a topic for another very politically incorrect show, so stay tuned for that. But just to put a frame of reference to it, if you were in the elite popular crowd in high school and college, you know just what I'm talking about. That's what it's like for gringos and gringas who might be coming down here looking for love and romance. And by the way, I was not in the popular crowd in high school and college myself, but I was in a rock and roll band, which does have its definite social advantages too. And I played cello in the symphony orchestra, which had snob appeal but zero social advantages at an age where you really needed them. So even now, I can talk Beethoven, Bach, Liszt, and Wagner with the best of them. But back then, it got me nowhere with the ladies. Now, if and when you do come down here to Latin America, you should never forget the following unwritten law. Whatever number on the 1 to 10 scale you were in the States, as soon as you end up down here in Latin America, you can instantly add 2 or 3 points to that score. So, for example, a guy like me, I always rated myself about a 6 when I was up in the States. As soon as I landed down here, I instantly became an 8 or a 9. And believe it or not, that can be a real problem, and I'll tell you why. Suppose you did not get much attention at all from the opposite gender when you lived up in the States. And on top of that, maybe you were an introvert or a wallflower. Obviously, I wasn't one of those. And all of a sudden, once you're down here, maybe for the first time in your life, the opposite sex is actually paying attention to you. Whereas before, up in Cleveland, maybe you were just treated as unremarkable and neutral. I mean, according to the bell curve, that's about 80% of everybody. Well, you see, like in that second letter that I just read to you, after the so-called honeymoon is over down here in Latin America, by the way, I'm not talking honeymoon as in marriage. I'm talking the honeymoon period that happens to all of us once we land in a brand new country. That first few months when everything seems marvelous and wonderful. Anyway, after reality sets in and you start seeing the warts and the problems that might come up living in a third world country, all of us, I mean all of us, after about 6 months or so, get a little bit depressed, wondering if it was really the right move to make. And during that time when expats are going through that phase when they're a bit depressed, that doesn't make you any less popular at all with the locals. But it's guaranteed to make you more susceptible to those certain temptations, if you know what I mean. And that's when a lot of expat couples start having troubles with their relationship. Now, you compound that with the extra temptation. Well, as you might imagine, you gotta watch out for that. And worse yet, what I've seen happen many times to single expats is that they crave companionship to help out with their depression, and they end up in a romantic relationship that's just not right for them. And a good percentage of them end up getting married or having a kid with the first pretty face or handsome guy they hook up with. And provided you don't look like Oprah or Danny DeVito, the eligible ladies and gents will be lining up to take a number. And you know, if you were a solid 4, 5, or 6 back in the States, you'd never think in your wildest dreams that you could ever have a date with the homecoming queen or the captain of the football team, much less Miss Cleveland. So what happens when a solid 4, 5, or 6 comes down to Latin America and he or she is suddenly faced with that? Like Jesus said, the flesh is weak, By the way, that was Jesus My Gardener who said that. Oh, and by the way, Expat Eddie has revised that 1 to 10 system. You know, the scale we all measure ourselves by. He says if you ask a gringo or an expat to rate themselves on that 1 to 10 scale, always subtract 1. Because we're all eternal optimists, you know? That aside, our dark and depressed expat who's throwing in the towel, he talks a lot about getting ripped off by the locals and believing that he'll come back to his place in Santiago, Chile and find out that the remodeling job he contracted for will never get done, etc., etc. Well, again, there's one thing I noticed myself that happens on and off the tourist trail. Gringos always, and I mean always, end up paying too much up front when they contract for services. Now, I'm telling you, when any contractor down here asks for 50% up front, a gringo will almost always give it to him. Yet, if you said to him, look, I'll give you the job, but I'll only give you 25% up front, take it or leave it, you know what? The guy's not going to turn down a job, not from a gringo. Yet so many gringos get sucked into paying too much on the front end. And like I've mentioned in past shows, Latin construction workers and contractors are not good about handling money. They're always living on the edge and can barely come up with payroll when they've got their own workers. So if they get in trouble by blowing the money you advance them, sure, they'll dilly-dally and delay because they'll be working side jobs, not yours, to scratch up some more dough. And in fact, they might even be using the material that you bought for your job on another job. So you can see, you've got a lot to learn when you come down here to Latin America, and that's why I do this show. And I admit, when I first came down, I got stuck in a number of ways, too. Nothing earth-shattering or depressing enough to make me want to go back to the States, that's for sure. Again, that's why I do this show. But now, let me say a bit about the guy who made the rebuttal that he's moving to Chile instead of Uruguay, because he found the Chilean passport to be much better. Now, you might have picked up on the fact that he said he doesn't mind paying $1,500 a month rent for that six-month minimum in-country residency requirement for the first 5 years. Now, that should have struck a nerve when you heard that, simply because anybody who's going to dish out $1,500 a month for rent in a Latin country obviously is not coming down to Latin America looking to live like a king on a social security check, because $1,500 a month rent will eat up your entire social security check. So for all you expats looking for a great deal, you're just never going to get it in Chile. For that matter, in Uruguay. Because whether you want to face it or not, those two countries are first world expensive now. And they're only going to get worse. But if you got $4,000 or $5,000 or more coming in on a good solid retirement pension, be my guest. Pick Chile. But as for the other 70 to 90% of first world Americans that aren't so lucky, you better rule out places like Uruguay, Chile, Panama, Costa Rica, and Argentina. Or maybe their cat food is better. Have you tried it?
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.